secularism, even when it's legally strong, even when it seems to control the commanding heights of academia, it's humanly weak because it cuts against basic human impulses and desires and aspirations.
New York Times columnist Ross Douthat speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And it's also weak because people keep having intimations that the world is more than just a bunch of atoms clashing together. And so the religious impulse always makes a comeback. And in that sense, it isn't a question of whether you're going to have a secular or a religious public square. It's a question of what kind of religious public square you're going to have.
You can listen to Ross Douthat's presentation, Making the Case Why the Public Square Needs Christianity, on a recording from our 2019 Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you along with a recording of Advent and Christmas hymns for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org. A young man who almost single-handedly exposed Planned Parenthood not only for the abortion industry that it is, but for taking the body parts of those aborted babies and trafficking them all over the country and the world, something that is absolutely forbidden by federal law. David DeLeiden has been sitting in a courtroom for the last 6 weeks, answering charges from Planned Parenthood's leaders all over the country that he trespassed, that he engaged in racketeering. Sadly, the verdict went against him. And at least at this point, the judge says and the jury says he owes Planned Parenthood more than $2 million in various damages. Will there be an appeal? There certainly should be. We're going to talk about this guilty verdict in the civil trial, Planned Parenthood v. Center for Medical Progress. Joining us to do so, Peter Breen. He's vice president and senior counsel for the Thomas More Society based in Chicago and lead defense attorney for David DeLeiden. Peter, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks so much, Todd.
In defending David DeLeiden, what did you find most frustrating in the course of this trial?
Well, there was a lot of frustration, most of it coming in terms of the rulings from the court. There is a well-developed body of case law that protects undercover journalism strongly because we have over a century of history in this country about it. And so many times during this case, Planned Parenthood's lawyers were ignoring it, and then oftentimes the judge was just going along with it and going along with legal theories and creating legal theories that just no one had ever even heard of or seen. And so that was probably the thing that just frustrated us the most all along. And then, you know, as we led up into this, the jury trial, we were frustrated with the presentation of the evidence. We weren't able to even show the videos that were the subject of the lawsuit. And then, you know, the jury was instructed in such a way that, I mean, it was almost like the coach drew up the play and then the players went out and executed the play. So it was very difficult. That was probably the most frustrating thing about this whole experience.
You have called this civil suit payback on Planned Parenthood's part. What do you mean by that?
Well, David DeLeiden and his small band of investigators operating on a shoestring, for what a few generous people were able to contribute, they literally brought a multi-multi-billion-dollar enterprise to its knees. They uncovered such incredible wrongdoing at the highest levels of Planned Parenthood that was what Planned Parenthood really, really wanted to address with their lawsuits. Because, again, well-developed body of case law protecting undercover journalism. And so Planned Parenthood's point here was to tie up David in litigation to try to stop or slow down his efforts in the future, and then ultimately to discredit all of the incredible evidence that he had gathered that culminated in, you know, congressional findings and criminal referrals for Planned Parenthood by the United States Congress.
What Planned Parenthood activities did the Center for Medical Progress eventually expose with those videos?
Well, number one, the thing that really got everyone's attention, if you'll recall the battle cry, as it were, was Planned Parenthood sells baby parts. And that's a pretty shocking statement. It grips you, and that's something that caused you to get up and pay attention. And so when you saw video after video of people haggling over the price of baby parts, David had both video evidence and documentary evidence he had collected showing these entities, their tissue procurement businesses, they buy the parts from Planned Parenthood, they mark them up and sell them to researchers. At every stage of the process, people are making a profit, and that's a federal felony and something that's just abhorrent. And so when David was able to show that the top abortion doctors at Planned Parenthood National and across the country, at some of their biggest affiliates, were perfectly willing to engage in this and even excited, that got people's attention right up front.
So give us the history of this case, Planned Parenthood v. the Center for Medical Progress.
Right. And this is one of about, oh, say, six or seven lawsuits that have been going on in this whole controversy. This one, though, was the big one where Planned Parenthood Federation of America, you've got all the California affiliates, and then the big affiliate in Colorado and in Texas. They all sued David and his fellow investigators for racketeering and fraud, breach of contract and recording violations and all of the rest. And this was in the San Francisco Federal District Court. So that's a tough jurisdiction for pro-life cases. San Francisco is not exactly known for its pro-life spirit. There are some very good folks working on it, but it's kind of a tough road to hoe. And of course, we got in front of a judge who early in his legal career, prior to becoming a judge, he helped to start a Planned Parenthood clinic that was one of the plaintiffs. You know, it was a clinic from one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit.
What did the jury find?
So the jury went against us on all counts, pretty much went against on everything. And so number one, and probably the thing that should really shock you, is racketeering. Anybody who's got a little bit of history in the pro-life movement or in legal history knows that the racketeering law was applied against the Pro-Life Action League and sidewalk counselors 2 decades ago, and it took quite some time to win those cases. That's why the Thomas More Society, for which I'm proud to serve, that's why we existed. We came into existence to defend that lawsuit, to keep pro-life activism on the streets and sidewalk counseling safe from legal assault. So racketeering, number one. And it was interesting, the predicate acts for the racket, as it were the production of novelty identification cards. So think about that. Production of novelty identification cards was what was the alleged cause of, you know, now millions of dollars in damages and the creation of a criminal racket. And remember, these are novelty ID cards, the same ones any undercover journalist would have as part of their cover story. Same ones that our folks, they didn't even go try to buy beer with them or didn't try to go and drive on them. It's just like millions of young people who shouldn't be doing that, but do occasionally. You know, so they didn't do that either. But that was the foundation of this first charge and the big one. So really, I mean, that along with everything else just really shows you that, you know, this jury was really tainted from early on because of the very, very poor jury instructions and the fact that Planned Parenthood was allowed to bring in evidence of clinic violence over the last 40 years. In other words, from before David Dalyden was born, they were able to use clinic violence that he had no connection with ever in any way, shape, or form. They were able to use that in the trial against him, and he wasn't even able to show the video evidence he collected in his own defense.
Why didn't Planned Parenthood sue for defamation?
Oh, well, that's this is the thing. So not to get too detailed on it, but there's the great seminal case of undercover journalism is Food Lion versus ABC. So ABC went undercover at the Food Lion, uncovered very bad butchering practices. They were mixing old meat and new meat. It was terrible, terrible things they uncovered back in the early 90s. So Food Lion sued them and got a big jury verdict against ABC that was then eventually reduced to $2 by the Court of Appeals. What they said to Food Lion was, if you want to get the damages based on what happened because of the publication, well, then you've got to sue for defamation. And you didn't do that because the problem was it was true. You know, and so the whole point of it is the publication of these undercover videos is First Amendment protected. It's utterly protected. It's freedom of press, freedom of the press, freedom of speech. So you can't get damages off that unless you sue for defamation. So unless it's false. And so that principle carries through here today in this case, which is David showed exactly what the people said to him. And at the end of the trial, Planned Parenthood, and it was very quiet, you didn't see this reported in the media, Planned Parenthood agreed that the words on the video were the actual words of the Planned Parenthood personnel. They agreed to that statement. You remember, in public they've been saying, oh, deceptively edited, deceptively edited. When it came push came to shove in court where you need evidence, they meekly conceded that, yes, we said all those words. And so for that reason, there was no way they could sue for defamation because David didn't lie. He told the absolute honest truth.
How were the damages in this case assigned?
Well, what happened was Planned Parenthood had actually started out this case seeking over $7 million or so in actual damages. So that's where they say, well, we've got an invoice or a, you know, a staff payment or what have you, and so give us this money. We got that all the way reduced down to under $700,000. It was still a good sum of money. But what happened, they were able to present to the jury this smaller group of damages, but the damages were either security expenses. So after the videos came out, there were, you know, public protests and pickets and what have you. And you know, millions of Americans were convicted in their hearts about this. They went out and protested. They called the congressman. They did all sorts of things. And, of course, you know, anytime you've got a big social issue, what have you, a few people get out of hand. And so apparently they sent some nasty messages on Twitter or what have you. And so there were security expenses. But again, that's the public reaction. So this is under the Food Lion case. That is Hornbook law. You don't get that. They also had claimed damages for security upgrades to stop someone else from coming in the future. But the problem is David and his team didn't break anything. All they did was expose that there were holes in the security. And so there's no damages theory where you should be able to charge David and his undercover investigators to make sure you stop the next undercover investigation. So those were the two main places where they went, and that's how they asked for damages. The jury then gave damages on that. They get tripled under RICO, so that's how you get your over almost $1.5 million. And then the jury gave punitive damages because they thought the defendants were bad people, in part because of all of this talk of violence, which the defendants had absolutely nothing to do with.
You mentioned a few already, but how would you summarize your concerns about the judge in this case?
Let me say this. We, the Thomas More Society, has never in its history filed a motion to disqualify a judge for cause. So there was an actual reason why the judge should go away. And I should say, until this case. And in this case, when we learned that the judge had actually been a lawyer for a not-for-profit, he was the board secretary and very prominent in that organization, was the lawyer for the organization. And that organization set up a Planned Parenthood clinic for free and operated it, helped to operate it, you know, provided joint staffing and things like that. And the judge was on, you know, was involved in that transaction, you know, and in maintaining it just prior to becoming a judge. We said, well, that's, you know, that's awfully irregular. And so we said that was something that would show at least an appearance of bias. You know, you don't like to accuse people of actually being biased, but you show an appearance of bias. The other point was that during the case, the judge's spouse is very active, apparently, on Facebook. And the judge's spouse was actually out promoting articles that called for David to be thrown in prison for what he did with his undercover work. Now, normally you don't hold someone responsible for their spouse's positions, but in a high-profile case like this, where there is an impression that you know, you want to be squeaky clean, you know, in terms of judging it, because of, you know, the issues are very sensitive, what have you. You've got the one thing, plus then you've got this other point, and the judge's spouse also has her profile picture includes the judge. So if you go on Facebook, you see, it looks as if a picture of the judge is endorsing these particular articles saying that a party in front of the court should be thrown in prison. Those things you just look at and go, boy, you know, that was something that really caught our attention. And then, I mean, look, the rulings that have been undertaken in this case, very much not in accord. They're very much against the governing precedent on the First Amendment and on undercover journalism.
We'll talk about one of those rulings in particular with Peter Breen on the other side of the break. It was just last week that the judge ordered the jury to return a guilty verdict on one of the charges against DeLyden. We'll find out what happened. We're talking with Peter Breen, lead defense attorney for David DeLyden.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Talking about the guilty verdicts in the civil trial Planned Parenthood v. Center for Medical Progress. Peter Breen is our guest, Vice President and Senior Counsel for the Thomas More Society based in Chicago and lead defense attorney for David DeLeiden. Before the break, Peter, you were talking about the rulings that the judge has been making over the last 6 weeks. It was just last week that he actually ordered the jury to return a guilty verdict on one of the charges. What happened there?
This is something that also really it struck us as odd. David was accused of trespass for entering, David and his investigators, they were accused of trespass for entering the conferences of Planned Parenthood. But here's the thing. They paid thousands of dollars to be exhibitors at these conferences. Planned Parenthood never returned the money. They walked right in, Planned Parenthood handed them their badges. And these conferences were held in hotels where it wasn't the hotel owner telling you to come in or go out. It was just someone who happened to be holding an event there. And so every indicator of what trespass law is trying to protect, you know, the whole point is you can't go into someone else's house or, you know, you can't go and, go do harm to their property. None of that was present here. And so it was a very odd ruling. Because we don't think that trespass properly construed in any way covers that situation where you've got a conference, you know, at a Westin hotel or what have you. That's not trespassing. Just, you know, but the judge, instead of letting the jury make the decision on that, he ordered them to find, you know, he said, I found trespassing. You just assign damages. So think about that, too. You're on a jury. You go into the jury room. You've got a 50-page long verdict form, which is outrageous. But page one is, how much money should we assign for the damage that the judge already said was found? It doesn't start a jury in the right frame of mind. Let's put it that way. And the judge also found against us on some contract issues and some other things that really we thought should have been left in the hands of the jury. The judge just decided to decide them himself.
Do you know why the judge refused to allow the defendants to testify about the harvesting and sale of human remains and admit video evidence?
Well, this is the thing. There's a standard in court that if something is unduly prejudicial without being probative, that the judge has the option of excluding some of the evidence. The problem was here, Planned Parenthood's entire case was about the credibility of David DeLeiden. And so one of the critical factors was that show the video. David's saying, this is what I found, and then you're not letting him show the video to back up what he found and what he was looking for. As well, the plaintiffs in the case put on these folks that said, oh, well, you know, I got nasty messages on Twitter or what have you. Well, what exactly caused that? Was it your actual words being shown and then the public saying, my goodness, you're terrible? You know, the evidence for one of the Planned Parenthood abortion doctors, who was one of the top doctors in the country, was that her neighbor had told her, God's going to kick you in the butt. That was the extent of the threat that actually came into court. And so, well, you know, you'd want to know, well, what exactly did your neighbor look at that caused your neighbor to come over and say, God's going to kick you in the butt? And of course, that doesn't sound like a threat anyway, but still, you know, that was what was put on in court. So really, you've got, you know, the issues of the actual evidence obtained, that really should have been in front of the jury, just so that we could defend ourselves. And again, remember, the judge allowed history from before David Dalyden was born of things that were happening at abortion clinics that were crimes, even though David, his investigators, no one was in any way connected to any of that. So the judge allowed very inflammatory material that had no relation to the case and yet excluded the very subject of the lawsuit.
How should the First Amendment have been applied in this case?
Well, this is the thing. The First Amendment jurisprudence here, that Food Lion case I mentioned, it's from 25 years ago. It is settled law. Numerous other courts have cited it. Everyone is in favor of it. The problem was, you know, so what we said was, hey, Judge, we just want a Food Lion instruction, which is that you've got to construe the videos as true, because if they wanted to try to challenge the videos, they had to say, you know, they had to sue for defamation, say it was false. So, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, you should construe those videos as true. So all those claims, they're true for the purposes of the lawsuit. And then number two, you can't give any damages at all that stem from the publication of the videos. Now, we're entitled to those two instructions. And not only did the judge not give us those instructions, he actually did the exact opposite and gave an instruction on the First Amendment. He specifically singled out the First Amendment and said the First Amendment provides no defense in any way to anything in this lawsuit. So that is absolutely false. It's not correct as a matter of law. That itself was prejudicial because it actually caused the jury to say, oh, well, the First Amendment doesn't apply. So the freedom of the press, the freedom of speech, the various freedoms that we expect for undercover journalism, the judge specifically told the jury to ignore, to exclude, that they had no place in court. So that was very much, you know, someone, myself, I do a lot of First Amendment law all across the country in a variety of ways. It was shocking to me and just saddening that we could be here in 2019 and still be messing up fundamental points of federal constitutional law like that.
What are the bases for an appeal?
Well, a lot of what we've discussed, but really, first and foremost, we want to bring up the First Amendment. Because it doesn't matter whether you're pro-life or pro-choice on abortion, we all are supposed to agree on the First Amendment. And that is a primary way of getting rid of all of the damages awarded along with all the punitives. So that cuts the heart out of Planned Parenthood's case. And so that is our primary vehicle. We're going to raise the other issues, which is we had a real problem with this particular judge. We think that the judge should have been removed for cause. And then some of the inflammatory, just absolutely inflammatory evidence that was allowed in, and yet we were not allowed to defend ourselves. Those are some critical places. Those are big, juicy issues that you know, a court of appeal or maybe the Supreme Court would be able to deal with. And I want to say something. You know, we go up to the Ninth Circuit from the San Francisco, the Federal District Court there. The Ninth Circuit is much different than it was 4 years ago. President Trump has, I believe, 8 confirmed nominees and 2 more coming on that court. So President Trump will actually be the president with the most nominees to the Ninth Circuit of any president. So there's a much different court than it was 4 years ago. So we're hopeful that they will see and apply the First Amendment in the way that everyone knows it should be applied.
If that were to happen, do you expect Planned Parenthood to press beyond to the Supreme Court?
This is one of those, I mean, neither side is going to yield an inch. I will tell you, early on, we had thought that maybe Planned Parenthood wouldn't bring a lawsuit because they would figure, we don't want to expose and have to go through discovery and all of the rest about our baby body parts practices. We figured they wouldn't want to take the risk. But once they saw the judge and they saw how they thought the court was going to rule, they felt very comfortable bringing that lawsuit, apparently. And really, when you see what happened, where you're seeing certain evidence being excluded and they were allowed to bring in all of this very inflammatory evidence that was unrelated to the case, so far they've had the better of that prediction. So that was something there. But again, both sides are going to fight all the way to the end. You know, and there are companion criminal charges that Planned Parenthood's preferred attorney general in California, Javier Becerra, has brought and that are proceeding as well.
What are the nature of those charges?
And those are illegal recording claims. So, David and his investigators were very careful. In the state of California, that's a two-party consent state. And so the standard there is, as long as you're in a place where you could be overheard, you can do undercover taping. So they chose public restaurants. They chose exhibit halls of conferences. So they didn't go into private areas, even at the conferences where they were attending. And so for that reason, David and his investigators figured they were on solid ground. And as well, the California Attorney General has never, in the history of the state, ever charged undercover journalists with illegal taping. Under the standard of David's taping, then undercover journalists are illegally taping in California all the time. But for whatever, just because this is Planned Parenthood's preferred attorney general, they charged David and have never charged anyone before or since with illegal taping. And I'll tell you, we've always treated that case very seriously. We just had a 2.5-week preliminary hearing in September. We've got the conclusion to that hearing is coming up December 6th, when we will get the decision of the judge, which charges will be allowed to go forward, if any. And I'll tell you, I thought this was absolute bunk. I still do. But with this jury verdict, the California Attorney General is going to be emboldened. And Planned Parenthood they've been filing briefs in that case, even though they're not supposed to in a criminal case. They're out for blood. They're out for David. They want to destroy David and his investigators because they don't want anyone else ever coming after them again to uncover any of their dirty deeds.
As far as we know, does Planned Parenthood continue to traffic in the bodies of aborted babies, and have or will they face any penalties for that activity?
Well, right now, we understand there is an FBI investigation, Department of Justice investigation of Planned Parenthood, that has been proceeding. And so, there were grand juries apparently impaneled. There were grand jury subpoenas that we learned about through our lawsuit that people were receiving. And however, the practice at Planned Parenthood of taking in money for parts and organs of aborted babies, that has stopped. So the money part has stopped. But there are still Planned Parenthoods now that are providing parts and organs to these tissue procurement businesses that then turn around and mark up the parts and organs and then sell them to researchers. So that is happening. I have to tell you this. We've seen evidence that business was about to explode in terms of growing within the Planned Parenthood network right before David's videos came out. There was talk of really going national with the whole thing across the country. They had some of their largest affiliates doing it, but it was going to be widespread, and that all came to a screeching halt, the expansion of it at least, with the publication of the videos. At the same time, just because they can't take money for the parts anymore within Planned Parenthood, what happens is sometimes these fetal tissue businesses, they become very generous donors to Planned Parenthood, which of course is a not-for-profit, so they can get a tax deduction, make a generous donation in exchange for Planned Parenthood allowing them to take their, what Planned Parenthood would consider medical waste, off their hands.
Finally then, David Dalyden has been a guest on this program. I'm astounded at how well he holds up since he released these videos and Planned Parenthood began their vendetta. How is he doing after the verdict?
So I sat next to, we all have our seats in the courtroom. I sat right next to David, just to his right, for all 7 weeks of this jury trial. And so, we're a lot of talk and a lot of passing notes. And, and David is a trooper. He was the kind of person that has the ability to go undercover in really the deepest, darkest elements of the abortion industry for 30 months. The ability to have that strength to do that, does carry you through. And so he is now 30 years old. He started started working on the project when he was about 23, 24. So most of his adult life has been spent in doing professional pro-life undercover journalism. And so, I mean, I got to say this, but look, no one wants to take a $2.2 million judgment against you. But for anyone who has, you know, David took it as well as one could expect. And, you know, look, you saw the statements. He issued statements immediately after that verdict saying, we're going to come after him. That's not right. We're going to appeal it. Justice was not done. So, you know, David just, you know, look, I mean, you roll with the punches and you keep going.
Peter Breen is vice president and senior counsel for the Thomas More Society based in Chicago. He's lead defense attorney for David DeLeiden. The Thomas More Society is a nonprofit law firm dedicated to restoring respect in law for life, family, and religious liberty. Find out more about their work at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Peter, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss an announcement by the Democratic Attorneys General Association that would only endorse pro-abortion candidates. Our guest will be Kristen Day of Democrats for Life. We'll also visit with Pastor Timothy Shoup, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Praise and Honor, Hymn-Inspired Devotions. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world. To view a variety of nativity sets, visit outdoornativitystore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at PerformanceFitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or PerformanceFitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.